This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Jeremy Markovich knew that he wanted to get far away, as far away, in fact, from any possible road as he could get in North Carolina. And that is how he started his adventure to the most remote places in the state. And he ended up discovering the hidden stories of those remote nooks and crannies. Jeremy shares those tales and more in a new podcast series by Our State magazine called Away Message. Jeremy is also a senior writer for the magazine, and he joins me now. Jeremy Markovich, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me more about the genesis of this project. What were you thinking about finding a place far, far away?
You know, it's funny. Last year, for the magazine, I took a 8-day, 200-mile kayaking trip down the Cape Fear River, the entire length. And part of it, I thought, would be interesting in the fact that I'm like, well, this has got to be a remote trip. And in some ways, it was. We didn't see hardly anybody the entire length for 8 days. But in other ways, it was not. I had cell phone coverage the entire time. So I thought I'm going to be, okay, I get to disconnect and kind of I can write things down in my journal. And then I ended up live tweeting the whole thing.
You know, you could have left your phone at home.
I could have. But it was good for notes. So anyways, we went down the river. And when I got back, I thought, well, you know, I didn't really kind of have this experience entirely like I thought I would. And that got my mind going, okay, well, if maybe the river isn't as remote as I think it is, well, what actually is? And that led me to try to find the most remote spots in the entire state.
And how do you find those?
Well, I started with Google. You can actually Google the North Carolina remote spot, and that actually led me right to a WUNC story about this couple that had gone had figured out what the most remote spot in North Carolina was from sort of a scientific definition. And as you said, they used the definition of the furthest place from a road being, you know, where the roads are is where the people are. So if you get really far away from a road, that is going to be the most remote spot. And so I called them up and talked with them, and then we decided to go ourselves. And it was up in the Great Smoky Mountains, and it took a day and a half to get there. It was rainy. We went off trail for a little bit, and there was a lot of, I think when we got there, the two guys that I went with, one was a friend, one was somebody that we just kind of needed a ringer to help us get to the spot, because I'm like, I don't know the Smokies as well as I should have. And we were both kind of like, where are we going? Like, you know, what are we going to see when we get there? And it all kind of leads up to like this spot in the woods that is just randomly there that is far away from a road.
And what do you like build a 7-Eleven? What do you do when you get there?
We kind of looked around, you know. I thought we were going to have this deep experience of like, you know, you get there,
yeah,
and you feel it inside, like there are no humans that are anywhere near here, you know. And in reality, and I don't think I'm giving too much away here, in North Carolina, the furthest you can get away from a road anywhere in the entire state, the place that we went to, 5.5 miles away from a road,
that's
as the crow flies.
Yeah.
So you know, you journey all to this spot, and you get there, and it looks like almost any other spot in the woods.
This is a state famous for its roads back into the 19th century. It's one of the things that made the state great.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
And banks. So that is true. So, but you do. And then I understand that your first adventure, once you decided to make this a thing, was to find this spot in North Carolina that the furthest from the road. You did that. But then you also took a look at the tri-state area where there's a marker, and that in fact, because the border was changed, although officials don't like to say they changed the border, it makes it an interesting story. Tell us more.
Yeah, every time you tell them that they move the border, they quickly correct you and say, no, we reestablished the border. We just found where it was supposed to go. And they actually have to say that because the Constitution of North Carolina says the border cannot change. But what happened with that was, so, you know, I wondered, okay, how far west can you get in the entire state? And so I drove all the way out. You know, people like to say it's Manio, from Manio to Murphy is how you describe North Carolina. There's a lot of state past Murphy, I found out. There's a half an hour west of Murphy that you can get. And the couple that was there, you know, that I met, that is, you know, they basically own the piece of property where Tennessee, Georgia, and North Carolina meet. And it is marked by a kind of regular-looking little brass disc. And people come from everywhere, like all over the country, to see this thing. It's incredible.
Here, it's A.D. and Shirley, who own the place at this point, and you met them, and here's how it went.
Give me a hug anyway, then.
Yeah.
You're a nice-looking guy.
Oh, thank you.
You really are.
And to give you a little idea of where we are, I am in a valley surrounded by green hills. There's a little wooden house that 80 built by himself back in 1951. There's some barbed wire fencing, an old beat-up Ford F-150, and across the road, a pasture full of cows.
So those are North Carolina cows.
Yeah. They're supposed to be, yeah.
Jeremy Markovich speaking to A.D. Patterson and his wife, Shirley. Clip from the new podcast, Away Message, hosted and produced by Jeremy and presented by Our State Magazine. Now, this is interesting. The fact that we had to adjust the border really owes to the fact that the surveying was done in kind of a funky way back when the borders were first done. I mean, it's a great story, isn't it? The zigzag, and then suddenly they just went home, apparently.
Yeah. If you look at where the North Carolina-South Carolina border should have been. I mean, the instructions were pretty easy. You start 30 miles west of the Cape Fear River. You go up at a 45-degree angle till you hit the 35th parallel, and then you just head due west. And what happened was they didn't do that. Now, this is, the 1700s, right. So the equipment's pretty primitive. But when you get out there, they're going. They stop 13 miles short. They put a stake in the ground. Next crew comes along, and they say, and then the king says, hey, make sure you get to the 35th parallel. And they go, okay. And then they don't. And they just go due west from there. And they cut off a lot of territory that South Carolina was supposed to get. So they draw the line. Again, they're out there with chains and poles. And again, this is like really remote, rough territory at the time. And they're going along. And they get around Charlotte. They draw the line around the Catawba Indian Reservation, we're at the spot now where, Carowinds is. And they say, we made a mistake. Instead of following the 35th parallel, we're just going to draw the line a little bit north of there to kind of give South Carolina this land back. And so they do that, but then the next problem is there are some iron deposits around Charlotte, and the line doesn't actually run due west. It kind of skews a little bit to the north. So you have this line that was supposed to be really just kind of two lines, is now all squiggly and weird and strange looking.
And it just stopped. And they billed the king anyway, but they just didn't do the job. They just went home, right?
Yeah. They were just like, well, we're done.
We're done.
Yeah.
I understand that when you ask people why you think they just stopped, they had a pretty good answer for you.
Well, in one spot, if you look at the Tennessee border between North Carolina and Tennessee, it runs along the ridge line. That was kind of the most of it is supposed to run at the top of this ridge, which is where the trail runs now. But you get close to the Georgia border, and it just goes straight down, boom. And everybody there, the rumor, the story that is always going around, although there is no hard proof of it, is that they ran out of liquor. And they just decided, well, if we don't have any more liquor, we're just going to, why are we going to the ridgeline? We're just going to draw it straight down and go home.
Nobody's going there anyway. I'm going home and getting a drink. So you would think, okay, a very remote place. Here's this tri-state area. Finally, the borders have been adjusted and, remote. Well, not exactly. You talk to AD about whether or not people show up at this place, and apparently they do.
So who comes out here and sees this other than me?
Everybody. They come in here by flocks, just buses and motorcycles. But in the last few years, has got interesting to people. Used to just like an old dead tree up here in the forest. Nobody knows where it's at. Nobody give a hoot. It's just that's up there. They come up here and couldn't find it. They come from everywhere.
A.D. Patterson speaking with Jeremy Markovich. A.D. and Jeremy all spoke together with A.D.'s wife, Shirley, and that is a clip from the new podcast, Away Message. It's hosted and produced by Jeremy and presented by Our State Magazine. Tell us another story, a really fantastic story about cemeteries along our coast when you talk to Helen Vance.
Yeah, so if you go back out to, it's actually in the Great Smoky Mountains, so there you have a valley, what used to be a river valley. And during World War II, when the TVA was really really doing their thing, they decided to build Fontana Dam, which is now the largest dam in the east of the Mississippi. So this was seen, if you're not from that area, as progress, as we're going to generate power and everything like that. If you live there, you're losing your land, your home, everything like that. And what happened is the valley became flooded. The cemeteries that were ended up being under the surface of the lake, they moved all of the remains and everything out of the cemeteries. The ones that ended up being above the waterline, they left there. Through the years, they became cut off. Now they're in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park, and there's really no way to reach them. A road that has been covered pretty famously called the Road to Nowhere, The federal government was supposed to build it. They never did. And so the only way you can reach these cemeteries is by boat now.
And this is fantastic because, again, it's part of the legacy of the Tennessee Valley Authority in this case, but also the national parks, all of those people who were displaced and moved. You know, some of the untold stories that are now coming to our attention. This particular story of cemeteries that are islands, because technically they were above ground, so we're going to leave them there. It's pretty interesting. And then you meet Helen Vance, who's determined to visit those cemeteries, although you have to get there by boat.
Yeah, and she is the one that led the charge. So she grew up in that area. Most of her family's property is underwater. And in the 1970s, they left in the 1940s. They had not been back to these places in 30 years. They have a reunion. They all get together, and Helen decides to get a boat and see if she can find her family's cemetery. And when she gets over there, it's a mess, as you might expect from a cemetery that's been in the woods and has not been kept up for 30 years. And so she kind of gets on this mission of, okay, well, we need to clean this up. So she asks the National Park Service. She persuades them to clean up this cemetery and other cemeteries. There's 28 that are on the north shore of Fontana Lake. And then she persuades them to run a boat service one day, every Sunday during the summer. They visit a different cemetery. So every cemetery gets visited once for what they call their Decoration Day, which is really just a wonderful Southern Mountain tradition of, you know, you serve food, you sing hymns, you put little flowers on the graves, you clean up the cemetery, and it ends up being this wonderful little ceremony, this little tradition that they're keeping on. They've been doing this for 40 years now, and I got to tag along when Helen went back to the cemetery.
You talked to Helen Vance.
40 years ago this month, we had our first organized decoration here since 1944. 40 years ago today, in 1978, we had our first one. And today marks our 40th one that we've been coming here. 40 years ago today, we came here as an organized group.
I think we ought to give the ladies that started this a hand of applause.
Helen Vance, who fought for access to isolated cemeteries in western North Carolina, and a clip from the new podcast, Away Message. It's hosted by my guest, Jeremy Markovich, who's a senior writer with Our State magazine that sponsors the podcast. How many people now are going on these tours?
Well, you know, that's the issue is, you know, Helen is 90 years old. And as you heard her, she's talking. It was a really rainy day, and she made it a point to go because she was worried that this may be the last time that she is able to go. And so a lot of the folks that are going, there was a couple dozen people that went on the boats. There was two pontoon boats that went out there, and most of them are older. And I think the worry or the great fear is that all of this work has been done to try to preserve and make sure that this ancestry, this history is not lost. And I mean, even Helen, I mean, to Helen, you know, she has uncles and aunts and people that friends that she grew up with that are buried in this cemetery. They're not just names. And the worry is that there's going to be this connection lost that once, you know, one generation is gone, that the numbers will dwindle and these cemeteries will be lost again. So you know, the folks that are going regularly to these places are really hoping to, you know, just keep these traditions alive and make sure that people know that they're out, even in some way, that they're out there, that these things exist, and then that they work really hard to make sure that these people that are buried there are not forgotten.
Before you go, I have to get you to talk about the Civil War wrecks and the one that you discovered, and not discovered, but that you went out to visit.
Yeah, so there was a guy named Billy Ray Morris, which is I love. He is the funniest person that I know that I've met for this, and who swears a lot. We didn't include any swear words.
Too
bad.
But
he, you know, they almost by accident found a Civil War blockade runner that was hidden in only about 20 feet of water, like a quarter mile off of Oak Island, and it had been there for 100 years. People had just forgotten about it, and it was there. They rediscovered it. They were all excited. It was a really cool thing to go out there and to have him talk about not even only the wreck, but also what they had found, just the history and all the stories that they had just randomly found about this wreck.
Here's Billy Ray.
How many wrecks do you think we pass on the ferry? Are there any out here that are like on either side of this route that are just sitting in the water?
Yeah, we're getting ready to pass the Raleigh, which is one of the ironclads built in Wilmington. We're going to run over the blockade runner Kate, and when we turn, we'll be able to look down the river and see where the ironclad North Carolina is. So that's three Civil War wrecks that literally, if there was no water right now, you could see all three of them.
Billy Ray Moore is from the new podcast Away Message, produced by Jeremy Markovich. He's also the host and a senior writer with Our State Magazine. One of the great backstories behind this is how they found how the coincidence of finding the story of that wreck coinciding with the discovery of the wreck itself, right?
Yeah, so they find the wreck, and they know a couple things about it. They figured out it is the Agnes Fry just by the dimensions of it. And then they put the story on the news, and then a woman in Jacksonville, North Carolina, is watching the news and goes, oh, I think I know that. And she goes up to her attic. She gets a box out and, you know, photocopies some stuff and sends it to Billy Ray, and it ends up on his desk. And it turns out this woman is the descendant of somebody who was on the boat and has this log of everything that had happened. So they kind of knew vaguely maybe how it got there, but learned basically through this guy's journal that, you know, they thought that they ran aground doing like 14 knots and everybody got off, and then it got bombarded by cannonballs, and they actually got hung up the night before because there was an attack going on and all of the lights on shore that normally would be lit were out. So they kind of got lost a little bit in a storm. I mean, just this fantastic detail that, I mean, as Billy Ray says, you know, this sort of stuff just doesn't show up on your desk, and it showed up on his desk.
Well, you're sitting there asking yourself, I wonder what happened. I wonder what the last day of the Agnes Fry was,
yeah.
And then the last day of the Agnes Fry shows
wouldn't
up.
Wouldn't it be nice if somebody just sent me all that information so I wouldn't have to go looking for it? Yeah.
Jeremy Markovich is the host and producer of the new podcast, Away Message, also senior writer for Our State Magazine. And you can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Jeremy, thank you so much for sharing that stuff.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's the State of Things for today. It is produced by Anita Rao, Charlie Shelton Orman, Laura Pelliser, and Jennifer Brookland. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.